for the budget presentation to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mrs. Feritella.
Here.
Ms. Fitzpatrick.
Here.
Mr. Hanna.
Here.
Mr. Horton. Mr. Cool.
Here.
Mrs. Lando.
Here.
Mrs. Logsdon. Mrs. Lozo.
Here.
Mr. Nichols.
Here.
Mr. Pelham. Mr. Potter.
Here.
Mr. Shue. Mr. Swackhammer.
Here.
Mr. Tobia.
Here.
Mr. Thu. Mr. Van Castle. Mr. Van Etten.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Awesome. I would like Legislator Lando to lead us in the invocation and Legislator Lozo to lead us in the pledge.
Let us pray. Yesterday, we honored the brave men and women who served our great country, protecting our American way of life and democracy. We owe them our thanks for their sacrifices. We pray for your guidance with our work for the county. And in your name, we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I just say one thing about yesterday? If anybody wants to look on WETM, I think it is, we had a five-year-old boy sing Star Spangled Banner yesterday.
Aww.
5 years old, and he did a beautiful job.
Wow.
And it's out. That was at the ceremony at the monument in Corning.
Very nice. Thank you for sharing that. And we will move right into the presentation of the budget message. Jack, take it away.
Thank you. I know it's everyone's favorite time of year, so appreciate you attending. And I will try not to be too laborious with this. I'm not sure if I can make this bigger, but this is the same exact deck that, and message that you have in front of you. So we are meeting our obligation and my obligation to you under your rules of procedure to present you a budget by November 15th. So we are under that deadline, and that's why we are gathered today. But go through a little bit of summary that the, as always, the budget workshops, the finance committee was extraordinarily well attended by nearly every legislator, and that's very appreciated so that you can have your input, which is most important on this spending plan from essentially the very start. So tough budget year. I think I say that every time. That was my old boss's old mantra. And it seems like we are we never escape that. But the good news is you folks are in a very solid financial position to be able to weather these storms. The largest increases, as we've talked about, are the market rate salary adjustments for staff. You have expressed, and we will get into some of those details, the need to retain qualified and highly skilled staff to serve our residents. So those costs represent millions of dollars of investment. I will say that talking to my peers, and I've shared this, we are not alone. This is going to be universal for pretty much any municipality, probably not just in New York State, but across the nation, that the labor market, especially for the jobs that we are hiring for, is very difficult. So we need to keep up with times for salary. State mandates always drive your budgets, and those are the largest unknowns every time we go into that. Medicaid, you will be at your statutory cap. The federal subsidy will go away. And safety net, specifically the cost of providing services for the homeless and temporary homeless, are skyrocketing. We'll get into that as well. But again, you have strong sales tax, even though it's down a little bit, the way that we conservatively budget, we can anticipate more in the budget to be able to balance interest earnings, credit to finance, and your decision making to partner with 3+1 are doing extraordinarily well, which is some needed revenue, and you have fund balance to offset. So you folks set a target, finance committee set a target of under 2%. And the budget that is being presented to you today shows that. That's approximately half in this presented budget of what the New York State property tax cap allowable increase would have been. So for all the years since the implementation of the tax cap, I believe in 2011, you have been under the tax cap every single year. And because of rising values of homes, your average property tax rate has decreased for the 12th consecutive year. Recognition is very important. Finance Committee, all of you, especially Finance Committee, put a tremendous amount of work into this. There are many of you, and I've always appreciated get to see how many flags you have in your binders when you come to the meetings. It's very, it really is a useful exercise, I think, hopefully for you all, but certainly for us, because, you know, I tell the students this when we do youth and government and other things, but the budget is your biggest policy tool. If you want to do something as a group, as our decision makers, you generally have to have funds for it. Not many things in this world and in government are free. So this budget is a policy document for you all. And getting into the nuance of why costs are rising or why costs are decreasing is very important. So really appreciate the hard work of every single legislator. Call out specifically the Finance Committee. Certainly the legislative chair does a tremendous job with budget involvement as well. Couldn't do it without the Finance Department. Mitch and Stacy especially do a tremendous amount of work and answer any silly question that I have to help through the process. Chris is the boots on the ground. Chris is the guy who notices the mistakes sometimes that I make and helps correct those. And he has a keen eye for these things. Couldn't do it without Yvonne. There's just a large amount of work to coordinate the logistics of this process happening. So certainly thank Yvonne and all department heads and staff. Once you adopt this, you are giving the financial control in many aspects over to your department heads and your staff members to responsibly spend the money. And they do a tremendous job with it. And I think your financial condition shows that. So total budget. The good news is you can see the bottom line, which is your tax levy has remained relatively flat, minor increases, while expenses and revenues have significantly increased over the years. Some of that can be attributed to the additional money that we received during COVID and the recovery that the federal government has injected, but also just the cost of providing services, especially your state mandated services or the local services that you all choose to invest your money in, whether it be transportation, roads, bridges, public safety, like the sheriff and 911. Costs are going up. Revenues, thankfully, are increasing as well, but your tax levy, because of the decisions that you have made, has remained relatively stable over the past 5 years. These budget categories for try to make this a consumable document for not just you all, because you're familiar with these categories, but also for the general public, because we do post it for them. But the budget categories are the categories that are established by New York State. When we talk to youth and government and others, no one could tell you what economic assistance and opportunity means. You all know because you've dealt with it for a lot of years, but that really is primarily social services. That has the largest dollar increase. And again, the two driving factors of that is the Medicaid expense going to the statutory cap and then the additional funds and safety net. You can see public safety. Again, you are investing additional dollars into public safety. General government is really your biggest budget category. That's your courts. That's finance, our office. All your central service functions are under general government. Education is going up this year. We are seeing, and you folks have talked about it at recent meetings, special children's services, early intervention, those costs are going up. There is more need of youth in our county for those, and we are not alone in that. We are seeing those costs skyrocket across the state, and we are the community colleges under the state budget have received a statutory rate increase, so those funds are baked into here. Others are more minor changes. Health, you can see some of that is a decrease in county costs. We're not providing less services, but we are anticipating additional state aid. And in this category, some of the actions that we have taken with funded vacancies do have an impact on that. but we are not in any way decreasing services in community services or health. So by category, I like pie charts. This is a snapshot of where the dollars go. Again, economic assistance and opportunity. This would be the same if you looked at any county in New York State, is going to be the largest share of any county budget. Number one, because your single largest expense, Medicaid, $20 million, is in that category. Where we differ a little bit is transportation. If you look at counties contiguous to us or even some comparable counties, transportation, the share that you spend for roads and bridges is much higher. And we all know why. It's because of our geography. We are a very large county with the third most road mileage out of any county in New York State and the most bridges of any county in New York State. So comparatively, when, you know, we get a lot of questions from, I don't see any media on, but we get a lot of questions from media. They take a look at these budgets and they see Chemung at 8% for transportation. That's just a rough guess based on what I've seen in the past, but much smaller county, they don't have as many roads or bridges to maintain. So that's where I like to use this chart to show in all other areas. I think we're very comparable to counties across New York, except for transportation, just because of our size. Revenue, again, so dollars out, where do the dollars come in? State and federal aid obviously is absolutely crucial to your operations. You have so many services, dozens of direct mandates, meaning you have no control over implementation of those mandates, but you either have to pay a portion or all of those costs. Thankfully, some do come with subsidy from the state and federal government. So about 30% of your revenues are in the form of federal and state aid. Sales tax is very, very important. Without I note here, a robust sales tax base, absent that, you would not have the ability other than relying on property tax increases to pay for things like road patrol, 911, public works, aging services. It's that additional revenue that we get from in the form of sales tax that allows you to do your discretionary services that I think your residents interact more and depend upon more than some of the others. So those are obviously very, very crucial. And tax levy, again, represents 21% of your revenues. So I view this as a very responsible allocation of anticipated revenue. Going, continuing with budget categories, again, this just notes that within specifically the Department of Social Service, you have Veteran Services, Office for the Aging, and Weights and Measures included in that cost category. And again, these are categories set by the state, but it's really social services that are driving that cost. And the cost would be significantly higher if it were not for the work of the commissioner of the deputy commissioner and their staff to really manage their expenses of the of your largest single department in the most responsible and cost conscious way while providing services that are mandated. As noted here, we will get 3 months of that enhanced federal aid for Medicaid, but effective April 1st, 2025, we will be at the statutory state cap for Medicaid. And a reminder, especially for newer legislators, that's just a bank account that we have that every 2 weeks the state takes money out of. We have no control. That's our share. So it is a significant investment. But if you look over, I like trending things like many of you do. Over 5 years, if you take a look, the rates have been more smooth, and it equals an annual average cost increase of 2% or over total increase over those 5 years of 10%. Transportation, again, this is your largest discretionary spend within your budget. Tens of millions of dollars you put into your roads and bridges. And I think being a resident of the county, I'm very appreciative of driving on county roads. One of the stories, not to bash any neighbors, but that I always like to tell the students is I have some old family down in Osceola, and I don't even need to know where it says welcome to Pennsylvania. As soon as I hit that Pennsylvania road and I start bumping around, I appreciate our county roads even more. So credit to Eric Rose and all of his staff. Again, modest increases. The big jump in 2024 and 2025, and I note this in charts in the future as well, is we have historically not budgeted Pave New York, Pave Our Potholes, Extreme Winter Recovery within the budget. We did that during mid-year adjustments because many of us hold a very skeptical view of the New York State budget process and are worried that at some point in time, those programs, unlike CHIPS, are just going to stop if state finances get tough. But it's been over a decade now that those programs have been in place and fully funded that we feel comfortable rolling both the expense and the revenue in. So that's why you see an increase in 24 and 25 for that. So we are better at the beginning of the year, better capturing both cost and revenue for those services. So with that baked in, the annual average increase for transportation has been about 7.5% over that time frame, 37 over those 5 years, 37% increase. But again, a lot of that is just rolling into your original budget instead of modified that additional revenue for those programs that you get. You've significantly invested in public safety for well over a decade now. It's one of your highest percentage growing cost centers, but those are all intentional investments that you have made to make sure that our law enforcement and public service agencies and emergency services agencies have the funding they need to provide critical services. So if you look at the five-year cost trend, it's about 6.5% increase per year or 34% over those 5 years. Now to take a step back and look at departments, if you look at more of a long burn trend for a 10-year, you can see, and I listed just the top 10 departments, and I apologize to Scott. Scott noted that I don't have a legend that shows you, but if you follow the chart on the left, it well reflects your top line is social services. And again, not any steep curves, but increasing. That trend is not going to abate at any time soon. There's just more need from our clients. There's more need from the residents. Hopefully, state aid keeps up with that, but that is not always a guarantee. More of the volatile swing that you can see, that your next line, the maroon line, would be public works. In times of financial difficulty, being your largest discretionary cost center, that's the first one, good or bad, that we have to take a look at. If budgets are tight, you spend the most discretionary funds in public works. That's where we pull back a little bit. So if you take a look, the good news is, and I get into it a little more in future slides, but we really do have a great program in place for the five-year plan, the road plan that is always updated, and they are years ahead of their plan. Not that roads out there don't need some more TLC, but from a planning standpoint, the investments that you have made in public works have made the road system and bridge system very strong. You see...
Question.
Yeah.
Do these public works numbers reflect the costs associated with the two floods?
So they would, this one would not, because this is budgeted.
Okay.
So in a future slide, you'll see where I include modified.
Okay.
So this is budgeted expense. So this would not reflect the floods. Good question.
All right.
But a future slide will. The jail steadily increases. The cost of providing services in the jail just continue to compound, especially as the sheriff mentions, when we have those in our custody that require medical care at facilities outside of the jail, we pay the cost. Many of those things you can't anticipate, but we're not alone. jail, the cost of operating jails across New York State has increased, even though the population of inmates has decreased. It's counterintuitive, but it is reality, and a lot of it is based on that medical care. Sheriff, you have made sustained and continued investment into the Sheriff's Road Patrol, an average over the 10 years of a 7% increase per year. Over that 10 years, you have increased that budget 64%, which other than community services is your largest investment in a department of local dollars. The other ones you can take a look at, certainly some of them are driven by changes in state law, such as the district attorney. You have provided him with additional staff due to discovery reform and some of those other state mandates. Community services is more of an intentional, I would say, investment into that department. So if you look at any of your departments, community services has increased the most over these past 10 years. And that is a combination of bringing staff in instead of contracting out, hiring more staff, providing more services. So what are the major changes? And I'm not going to read this all to you. You were perfectly capable of doing that. But as I mentioned, salaries and wages are the biggest driver. We have used for management and CSEA, which we are currently under negotiations with outside consultants, compensation consultants, to help guide what market rate truly is. We have, happy to report, have signed the Memorandum of Understanding with the Deputy Sheriff's Association as of last Thursday. We feel that we are in a good place from a compensation standpoint for that unit. And the only unit that we have open or that has a current contract through 2025 are the corrections officers and dispatchers. But we will go through, we intend with your approval to go through the same exercise of making sure that they stay up to market rate as well. So the estimated impact of salary and wage adjustments in this budget is 4.8 million. It's significant, is the best that I can say. It is the single largest investment in wages that I can remember. We are not in the days of where we were debating and you were debating, do we do 1.5% or 1.75% increases? 10 years ago, those were the discussions that we had, and we were keeping up with market at those rates. The market is so vastly changing, and we are trying to compete for top talent to fill these positions, that these are, in my opinion, and based upon the decisions that you have made, needed investments. So we do appreciate your willingness to invest those funds in this area. Important to note in the final bullet under that category, that to balance the budget and with the reality of the fact that we have a higher than average vacancy rate, that we have reduced budgeted positions that we don't expect will be filled by the end of the year or within the first couple months of 2025. We have reduced the budgeted amount for both salary and fringe to 50%. Now, you have established in your administrative code procedures that allow the Commissioner of Finance and our office to approve transfers between departments to fully fund any position that is going to be filled. So I can assure you that certainly if there is a department in need and they have a budgeted vacancy, we have the funds within this budget to be able to fill those. But we are, even with a new contract, we hope that that will help with CSEA, which is your largest group of employees. We hope that come January 1st, if we're successful in getting a contract effective, then we can hit the ground running and be in a much better position to recruit staff. But still, even in good times, you have staff turnover that creates vacancies and does create some balance because you're not spending those funds. Retirement, again, the comptroller has increased the retirement contribution rate. This is for the employee retirement system, which most are in, for our corrections officers and also for our deputy sheriffs. The rates are higher than this, but the increase of 8.5% is applied to them. But we pay closer to 25 to 30% for theirs because they have a shorter retirement window. The comptroller likes to say, well, rates only went up 1.3%. But if you look at the percentage change of those rates, it's actually 8.5% that the actual cost has increased. Knock on wood, health insurance, your next category. We're coming out of 3 or 4 years of higher than average high cost claims. For a reminder for everyone, we are self-funded for health insurance. We do pay Excellus to administer claims on our behalf, but we pay the actual claims. So when there is a catastrophic claim, which we consider or a high cost claimant, any individual subscriber that consumes more than $100,000 a year of cost, we consider a high cost claim. Don't want to jinx it, but as of our last report that finance and personnel in our office received on Friday, we have zero high cost claimants at the moment. But that really drives it because we do have stop loss for catastrophic claims to protect us from really elevated costs. But the cost of specialty drugs and some of these medical procedures just really are astronomical. Thankfully, we see things smoothing, but in working with Excellus and Gallagher, our benefits advisor, they actually recommended increasing it more than 8%. They recommended 10% and above, but we feel, especially with the smoothing of high cost claims, that raising both the county share and the employee share 8% is reasonable in this time. It's still a very, very to your employees. It's still one of the best health plans out there in terms of coverage and cost. And we do use that for recruiting. Again, some of our new recruits don't view that as the most important thing, but when they need medical services and they can get top tier at very, very low cost, I know it's appreciated. From a staffing standpoint, we've been relatively flat for the past 10 years. You have seen things creep up in 2024 and 2025. And the main points of where we are in terms of these increases, I would say, is for 2025 is largely converting contracted services to county positions. I expect that trend to continue. And we've discussed many times the benefits, at least in our opinion, of having those folks be county staff members as opposed to contracted services. So if you look in the Office for the Aging and then also Community Services, we are bringing more of those folks in-house, which is a benefit. In prior years, you would see the increase is more attributed to things like Harrell Herring, where we added 20 attorneys to the public defender's office. We're not seeing that in 2025, but I do anticipate this, as I note in this chart, to continue to increase in 2025 and beyond, not significantly, but that we are in the midst of implementing supplemental EMT services. We started this out and it's been working extraordinarily well from talking to folks on the ground and talking to Tim and Brandon Rossetti. But we will have the need to convert those, not just because civil service requires it or the state requires it, can only use temporary employees for so long, but we will need to create formal, either part-time or full-time positions. It'll likely be a combination, and we intend to bring to you, if not December, then January, the recommendations to start that transition. But it will be a gradual process. We're not going from 0 to 60 all at once. We're going to start phasing that in. This budget does, and we'll get into that a little bit later in terms of EMS. But again, we are seeing higher than normal vacancy rates. We do hope that all the salary actions that have been taken will significantly help that next year.
So that number does count the 50% of vacant positions as a position?
That counts it as one. Yes. Okay. Yep. So that doesn't count as half a position.
So just some history for some of the newer folks. So the drop in 2021 was our early retirement program we offered during COVID. What doesn't show on the chart is I think we also offered one in 2008 or nine.
Nine.
Okay. Because when I started, we were almost 1,100 employees. So, I mean, we're still well below that.
Yeah, if you looked at the 15 to 20 year trend, we are still at the lower end of many decades. As Scott mentioned, the early retirement, we 40 or 50 left in 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
And actually, many of those positions we did not replace. That was a time where we consolidated duties. And actually shrunk headcount. And then the sale of the healthcare facility in 2013 into 14 reduced it by about 140 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So county staff costs, as to be expected, and as we've discussed, your blue line at the top, regular wages, is the most significant increase. Health insurance, the good news is, and this is where it does pull in the budgeting at 50%. When we budget at 50% for fringe, for health insurance, we do budget 50% of a family plan. So again, some nuance and savings there, because a family plan is running now $35,000, $36,000, with a single plan more like $17,000 or $18,000. So because health insurance costs are going up 8%, but we are budgeting those vacant positions at 50%. That's why you see that orange line, the next one down, more flat than you see it increasing. That's a function of budgeting at 50%. Retirement, I've seen larger swings than this. It's not flat, but the increases haven't been astronomical, which is good. Have to give credit to Comptroller DiNapoli, because he's under his administration, you've seen less of a roller coaster ride. There were years back in the tech boom when the markets were going crazy that employers were contributing zero. And then when things go bust, going from zero to paying 20% of salary, that's a lot to ask of municipalities. Talking to Mark and others, maybe some in the room that were here during those times, trying to fit, you know, over $5 million of retirement addition into a budget is a difficult thing. So steadiness in this is appreciated. And the only other thing I would highlight on here is the work that Scott Sprague and staff have done in workers' compensation. Some of the changes that you've made, I think you've struck a tremendous balance to not overcharge our municipal members in our pool, but to charge them an appropriate rate, hopefully one that would be below what they could get in other markets. But for the longest time, for decades prior to these market rate actuary driven charges to municipalities in the plan, the county was subsidizing the plan just because we had the highest payroll, which was one of the primary factors that the rates were based on for our own pool. We were subsidizing it to the tune of $1.5 million more than we could have gotten a quote on our own if we went 10 years ago. So that number keeps drawing down, but still our members are happy. The municipalities are happy. So I think we've struck a very good balance there. Social services, again, about a 5% increase. Won't belabor it because I've talked about it a couple times now, but the end of the enhanced federal funds have a direct impact of almost $800,000 of actual cost into this budget. And then we all know the commissioner does a very good job keeping you informed of the significant pressures that we have in the homeless population and caseload. And again, we are not alone. Every county in New York State is seeing the same exact thing. The challenging thing, and we knew this would come back to bite us. The state tried to present it. I don't know, Kathy, it was 7 years ago now when the state changed. We used to pay a like amount of TANF and so temporary assistance for needy families and safety net. The state said, oh, we'll take over the cost of TANF. You take over the majority of the cost of safety net, and presented it like it was going to be a big savings to us, or at least neutral. Cost of safety net is increasing much more than the cost of the TANF program. So counties are eating most of the cost of that state program. But as I note, the department has done really a phenomenal job. I can't thank them enough, because being your largest department, when things get dire, more than a couple times during the summer, I have to text or email or call Kathy and Chris and say, we could really use $500,000 to help balance this budget. And through their creativity, without decreasing services, without decreasing staff, they're able to leverage other funding sources and really get creative to provide services. So that help is always very appreciated. Medicaid, talked about it. We like to see this flat line. The only thing I'll note on this chart, to not belabor it, is the dark clouds on the horizon that I think we need to be aware of. Medicaid and education are the two single largest expenses in the state budget. The state, you'd have to have multiple PhDs in economics and finance to try to figure out what their books look like. But NYSAC does a good job trying to educate us on what the out years look like. If they continue to spend, especially, and it's not a value judgment on investing in education, because I think we should invest in education or Medicaid, but structural changes need to happen in the system, because the out year trends, the 10, 20 year trends of both of these programs, it's just a steep, steep curve. And that's what makes us at the county level worried that the state might take the easy route, like they have done many, many times in the past. And instead of making the hard choices to cut their own expenses, they will change a percentage with a stroke of a pen, and your cost could be increased by millions. So we just have to keep a lookout for that. And we will obviously work very, very hard with NYSAC and continue to advocate to at least keep the cap. You know, there was a lot of years where counties were pushing to take our Medicaid cost to zero, like most other counties throughout the United States. But we know that's not reality. The state can't pick up an additional $8 billion. But if we can keep the cost stable, then we can manage, and you can continue to provide the other discretionary services that you want without, you know, financial peril. EMS. Really a credit again to emergency services and Brandon Rossetti for their implementation. I've talked to a lot of you folks, and I've talked to our local officials, local first responders, some doctors, hospital systems, and they are just saying that even the few supplemental resources that we're providing is making a world of difference in the field. We envision this continuing. So, but I view it as a year of gradual progression. These decisions will come back to you. So, but from a budgeting standpoint, we have budgeted to change the BLS coverage from 5 days a week to 7 days a week, because we do see the need out there. And we do see the need to, again, transition staff from permanent part-time or from temporary part-time to permanent part-time and some full-time as well, to be able to cover the staffing. With this, we have increased the local cost to a projected impact of $1.6 million, which is about $400,000 more than last year. But we have not increased revenue. We are starting to receive revenue. As you know, many of our billings are Medicaid, Medicare, and we have just become eligible as of a couple months ago to bill Medicaid and Medicare for those costs. So I think you'll see that revenue increase. I think the revenue that we put in there of $250,000 will be conservative. Hopefully we can exceed that. Sheriff and the jail, again, significant increases for both of these. In the sheriff, the primary increases, bless you, are wage. The wage increases. I would note that the wage increases, what they reflect, are the continuation of the contract that is expiring. So the step increases, so that is built in there. In other portions of your budget, in undistributed fringe, is where the cost is captured for the new contract that was just ratified on last Thursday. Also includes the purchase of 4 vehicles at lease end. As Chris has mentioned many times, when these leases run out, We get really tremendous value in purchasing those. The budget does reflect that. In the jail, increase of about 3%, and that really is driven by overtime, by the cost of medical services, and we have reduced the budgeted revenue for housing federal inmates just because we haven't had the staffing or the capacity to be able to do so. Highway, while it is a cost decrease, a minimal cost decrease, it's really reflective of us capturing in this budget the anticipated revenue from all those state programs that we get. So you still have a total of $9.5 million available for road construction, which is, you know, kind of all-time highs for us. So I think we're in a really good spot for investing into our roads and bridges. Major equipment is very close, $2.2 million, which is about what it was last year as well. We are proposing utilizing $1 million from that CHIPS funding to offset the cost of major equipment. Road construction, and here's what Scott mentioned in terms of if you look at modified, this modified, which is your orange line at the top, reflects capturing some of the costs of the floods. So you do see in 2021 higher than normal, and again in 2024. So that would reflect all of the materials and equipment rentals and things like that from your modified budget standpoint. But again, hopefully this chart will naturally smooth out as the years go along. But the big jump in 24 is really recognizing that additional revenue from the state. That's why the modified is what you spend. And what we've spent during the year, we're getting closer to really matching that in your spending plan.
Yeah, unfortunately, our spend is ahead of waiting on FEMA to reimburse, which can take up to 3 years.
Three to five, yeah.
Yeah, so we're showing a lot of additional expenses where we're actually going to get reimbursed for some of it. We don't know when.
Correct. It's a receivable, but we have no idea when.
Yeah.
Yeah. Credit to FEMA that for Tropical Storm Fred, we have received probably the majority of the funds. We are waiting on some of the other bigger projects, the wall, one of the bridges, but they were pretty good in that. But talking to other communities throughout, I talked to some folks in Texas after Hurricane Harvey, and they were 5 years removed and still waiting on funds.
Wow. And if I could just comment on your capital, this year we also approved basically 3 years worth of 10 wheeler and triaxles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we're carrying that capital cost in 2024. We won't see it for 3 years.
Correct. Yep. No, that's a good point. And it does allow us to fit other large piece of road construction equipment that in years you'd have to make decisions how many 10 wheelers to buy versus can we afford a new grader.
Mm-hmm.
Where because you did that pre-purchase, which was very needed, and that you could fit that within your existing budget footprint. So in your capital projects, again, all of these are very, very similar to prior years. Your major equipment or minor equipment, so any individual item less than $5,000 is approximately $240,000. That's very similar to last year. Major equipment, again, very similar to last year, is $3.8 million. Your largest share, as we mentioned, is public works of $2.2 million. $695,000 is allocated for the landfill, but this is paid for through the enterprise fund. Your capital projects, those ones listed in your budget, the really facility improvements are $2.1 million. $425,000 of that is for buildings and grounds, and $175,000 is for landfill. Bond payments, you only have a couple more years of bond payments this year. It's remarkable to have a budget this size, an organization this big, with less than $500,000 in debt. You do not see that other places. And that's because of the intentional decisions that you folks have made and because of the strong financial position that you're in. Tourism and publicity. So this is your room tax. So these are allocations made for by the collection of room tax for the visitors who come in and spend the night. Again, we are now beginning with Granicus. You can see in other expenses that $60,000 is our subscription to Granicus to help identify the short-term rentals and collect taxes on those. But as your designated tourism promotion agency, Conference and Visitor Bureau retains the largest amount of allocation that you provide. And you do fund a number of others that come do a phenomenal job, come and present to you to do their best to bring folks to the area and spend money, get you more sales tax, get you more room tax, help balance the budget. Sales tax, again, we have taken a very conservative approach to budgeting sales tax. I think that's a prudent thing to do because it's something that can swing. If you get too close to the edge with sales tax or project an increase that does not materialize, you can find yourself in a structural budget deficit, which some communities around us have been in. But we do feel that even with being conservative and anticipating, Mitch did a great job modeling, if the trend of a 1% decrease continues for 2025, we are still even increasing this sales tax budget, budgeted revenue by $2 million, we would still be comfortably below actual collections. So it's still conservative, but it is less conservative than we have done in the past. Property taxes, again, while you see an increase, these increases have been minor. This budget as presented to you today does show a 1.7% increase in the levy, which is about half of the allowable New York State property tax cap. Your average five-year increase has been 1.3%, so well below CPI. And again, for the 12th consecutive year, you have your average full value tax rate has decreased. In this case, it's decreased 4.7%. Your total 10-year reduction in your average full value property tax rate has decreased nearly 30%. So it's a credit to you all. I will note, as I do every year, some counties would present this budget as a 4.7% decrease because the average full value is decreasing. But we like to be transparent and with this that taxes are going up slightly. No one, depending upon, it's the complicated formula, depending upon equalization rates and the county spread, that the average rate will decrease. But with property values going up, it's not like someone's going to, you know, everyone's going to pay 4% less. But just as a heads up, when you see other communities present their budget, some do present based on their tax rate. We like to show you both. And with these charts, this is the first year in many, many years that with the addition of community colleges, your 9 for 90 or your 9 largest state mandated programs of which you do not have control over, if you could include community colleges, top 106%. You are almost at 100% for the first time in a long time for just those 9 programs. Obviously, Medicaid is the largest, but you can see safety net increases are significant and your increase in your pension contribution as well. So it's just a chart that we like to use to be mindful that only 9 state programs consume almost every dollar of your tax levy. So without state aid, federal aid, and specifically sales tax, you wouldn't have the ability to pave roads, to provide public safety, to do these other things. So just like to not throw shots at the state, but just make it very well known that because there's a narrative out there that, you know, it's local government in New York State that are driving these costs. If 9 programs cost us $50 million and they're state mandated that we have no control, that's a significant issue. So in conclusion, you have set the directive from the beginning to maintain state to maintain local programs that of which we have control over, and this budget does that. There is a slight increase in the tax levy, but again, a reduction in the average tax rate. Salaries, wages, Medicaid safety net really drive this. And it's just a credit to you all. You are very, very actively engaged in this budget process, which is appreciated on our end. And the staff, department heads, especially many in this room, just do a phenomenal job. They're the ones that truly get the budget to the place before you see it of where we need to be in the realm of something that you folks will be accepting of. So last couple of things are just required reports with a lot of caveats. You can read those at your leisure, but your rules of procedure direct me to file those with you. So they are so filed. And with that, thank you, Chair. And I am done.
Are there any questions or comments? Mr. Van Etten, of course.
If you look at the last page, the required one at estimated fund balance, I'm just intrigued by the last column, which is landfill, obviously an enterprise fund. The fourth quarter estimates of revenues being 2.8 million, but expenses 6.5. What is driving that expenditure amount?
Would that be?
Yep.
Can you go to the microphone, please?
So what we do for the projected fourth quarter for both the revenues and expenditures, and maybe there's a better way to do it, but we take the aggregated expenses for the year and then we annualize them.
Okay.
So that we come up with an estimate for the fourth quarter. And then in looking back at your prior reports, there is no appropriation for either the DM fund, which is your road machinery, or your E fund, which is your landfill. So those were left blank. But that is the idea of how we come up with the projected revenue and expenses. And then that ties into the projected fund balance. And the recommended appropriation is a bit from historical percentages, and then also your fund balance in the administrative code.
It just seems that the fourth quarter is netting out 3.7 million of reduction, and yet year over year, we started at 13.6 million of fund balance. We're ending at 11.6. So that's 2 million in reduction. So the fourth quarter is driving actually more than what the reduction. So we gained, obviously, an enterprise fund, and then our estimates on fourth quarter are knocking it back.
Right, right.
Does that include some of those journal entries that you have to make for the money we save for post-closure and some of those things, or this is strictly governmental cash basis estimate of fund balance?
Yeah, so we don't take those into account for a year for this analysis. You're right. It's just the
cash basis.
Just the cash basis expenses to date and on an annualized basis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have any questions or comments? I would like to thank the county manager and all of the people that work so hard on this budget. We are very fortunate to have the team that we have that puts our numbers together. And it's been said before, and we'll continue to say it, how we are in a very good financial position. What that does is it allows us to react to the needs that our community has. Those reactions, we established the EMS service, which is going to make a huge impact on the safety of our local residents. We value our employees and our staff. So we have market rated their wages, and we will continue to monitor that because we want to attract and retain the best staff that we possibly can. The other thing we want to do is we want to encourage our constituents to shop locally. You can see with all of these charts and these numbers what an impact local sales tax has. And the room tax gives us the ability to continue to invest in those tourism programs and those other items that continue to bring people to our wonderful area and help us fund those kinds of programs. So with that, does anyone else have any other questions or comments? Are there any announcements? Just noted that we are removing Resolution 1 from the agenda. And unless anyone has anything else, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Any all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We are adjourned.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.